This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. In the first half of the 1900s, racism and Jim Crow laws kept African-American baseball players from being on the same teams as white players. So in 1920, the Negro National League was formed, soon followed by other rival Negro leagues. An exhibit now on display at the galleries at Sinclair in Dayton, Ohio, Shades of Greatness, is the first art exhibit inspired by the history of Negro Leagues baseball. And joining me now are Michael Carter, Sinclair Community College Superintendent of School and Community Partnerships, and an avid collector of Negro Leagues baseball memorabilia, and Dr. Raymond Doswell, Negro Leagues Baseball Museum Vice President of Curatorial Services. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ray and Michael, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Ray, how were the Negro Leagues formed, and how many years did they exist?
Well, there were a number of African-American baseball teams, individuals and teams, who were playing the game of baseball in the late 1800s, wanting to form professional teams, but because of collusion, and basically stemming from the racism and segregation of the day, that prevented all black teams from joining the beginnings of the major leagues, although a handful of individual players did get to play on what would be considered all-white teams. So they just formed their own entrepreneurial efforts of creating baseball teams and attractions, but it wasn't very stable from the standpoint of trying to get regular leagues, regular schedule going and a steady amount of games played. So there was an effort to push for teams to form league structures. And the most successful attempt at that happened in February of 1920, which ultimately resulted in a meeting here in Kansas City that formed the Negro National League. And among the teams that were there included a team from Kansas City, a team from Chicago, team from Indianapolis, and one from Dayton, Ohio, the Dayton Marcos.
So Dayton has a connection to the Negro Leagues. Cincinnati also had a Negro Leagues team at one point, didn't it?
Yeah, there was a team called the Cincinnati Tigers that played in the 30s. Didn't last very long, although they did have some notable players. And another team that folks may remember that played a lot of games in Cincinnati were the Indianapolis Clowns. They played a lot of games across the field, especially in the 40s, splitting time between Indianapolis and Cincinnati. They were primarily for most of their history, what would be described as a barnstorming or exhibition team that also had the added effect of vaudeville antics along with the baseball play. But they did have some notable players to play for them, including former basketball players like Reese Goose Tatum, who was a star with the Harlem Globetrotters and is inducted in the National Basketball Hall of Fame, and a young Henry Aaron, who played with them in the 1950s.
Michael, now, you're an avid collector of Negro Leagues baseball memorabilia. What kinds of memorabilia do you have?
Primarily jerseys, authentic replicas of Negro League jerseys, and kind of started by accident. I was at many years ago, probably 20 years ago, I was at a shopping mall and saw a Pittsburgh Crawford's jersey and loved it and thought it was just really nice. And then from that, you know, from then on, just really tried to find every Negro League jersey that could. Kind of started with me and my brother. And you know, you get the older you get, the less imaginative you are as far as gifts. So, you know, oftentimes over the last several years, my brother for birthdays and Christmas would get me a Negro League jersey, and from a company called Ebbetsfield Flannels, which, you know, kind of looks at the history of the game, the material, color, and things of that nature, and makes a jersey. So, collected jerseys and jackets, and yeah, we're excited also that there are several of the jerseys that I have in my collection that are part of the exhibit as well. And we really, we're really excited to have Dr. Doswell there to get his take and see how it looks interspersed with the wonderful artwork that that we were able to put in the exhibit.
Who were you mentioned, Ray, some of the notable players from the Negro Leagues. Who were some of the other star players from those days?
Well, especially some that are depicted in the artwork in the show. A lot of people may be familiar with players like Leroy Satchel Paige, who was an outstanding pitcher and just a charismatic figure in baseball's history, let alone the Negro Leagues. There's a large painting that that depicts him, along with some other smaller mixed media pieces that also are inspired by him. Josh Gibson, a famous home run hitter, is featured in at least two or three pieces in the show as well. Some unique figures include Effa Manley, who was one of the owners of the Negro Leagues and one of the a prominent female players, and not a player, but someone who had great influence in African-American baseball as an owner of the Newark Eagles. And she is also a unique character in the history of baseball and is portrayed in a couple of pieces in the show as well. So folks will get a great sense of individual stories as well as collective team stories and community stories through the artwork in this show.
Raymond, when did the museum in Kansas City start, and what types of things can people see and experience there?
Well, when you come to our museum in Kansas City, which began officially in 1990, but our current space opened in 1997. So it grew from a small office grassroots organization, had a temporary exhibition which opened in the mid-90s in what is called the 18th and Vine Historic District here in Kansas City, which is noted for its connection to the baseball history as well as jazz history, including Count Basie and Charlie Parker, among others. And our permanent facility here, which is around the corner from where that meeting I mentioned in Kansas City for the founding of the Negro Leagues happened. And when visitors come, they'll see the revitalized district with housing and our museum, along with the American Jazz Museum, which is our neighbor. And you'll come and see a mock baseball stadium of sorts for the baseball museum experience. You come to the turnstiles and you'll see an exhibit that features film, it features sculptures, it features photographs of the history of African-American baseball from the late 1800s through the 1960s, plus we have a museum store as well.
Raymond and Michael, I'd be interested in both your perspectives on this. Do you find that there are a lot of people who don't know about the Negro Leagues and the players and the history of the Negro Leagues just hasn't received enough attention? Do you find that to be the case?
Well, I think that, and Dr. Doswell would certainly know more than I, but I think that my personal experience has been that I was struck by the low numbers of people who are involved in athletics, specifically baseball. I was surprised that there are a number in my area of high school baseball coaches who know nothing about the Negro Leagues and history in general. And I think that, you know, there are a lot of reasons for it, but I think it's important that that students and coaches and everyone know. I think that, you know, athletics tends to be oftentimes a precursor of what happens later. A lot of times, you know, many people don't realize that, you know, we're talking about a decade before Rosa Parks refused to ride in the back of the bus, that Jackie Robinson was court-martialed for refusing to do that. So, you know, athletics and sports, whether it's baseball, basketball, football, are oftentimes lead the charge as far as integration. I think historically it's been kind of more comfortable to do it in athletics prior to just the larger social context. But, you know, it's American history. It's not just Negro Leagues baseball history. It's not just black history. You know, this is part of American history.
So, Ray, the as Michael was saying, sports has played a significant role in civil rights, hasn't it?
Indeed. We find in terms of our ability to introduce this topic, especially of race and segregation, that sports has been a great entree to the topic. And as noted, a lot of what is going on in the Negro Leagues and with particularly with the ascendancy of Jackie Robinson is seen in many circles as a really important opening bell to the modern civil rights movement that was happening with Dr. King and the issues that were happening in the South. And just to kind of give a perspective on that, still, Robinson is really the climax of Negro League history, so to speak. His success is the apex of what happens with the Negro Leagues, but it's also the beginning of the end of that era. And yet it still takes from 1947, when he makes his first professional appearance in Major League Baseball, to 1959, before every team has at least one black or Latino athlete on their regular roster. And we're still before a lot of the things that were happening in the major parts of the civil rights movement. So the integration of baseball was a long, slow process, but an important one. And I reflect on people like the great pitcher Don Newcomb, a former Dodger pitcher, who said upon meeting Dr. King, he said, "It had not been for your success and Jackie Robinson and Roy Campanella's success, I could not do the work that I am doing today." And that's something that touched him very deeply. And really, as you noted, sports helped lead the way.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Michael, tell me the story about how you came across the Shades of Greatness exhibit and how you got that to come to Sinclair.
Well, it actually goes back a couple years. We have a wonderful columnist, one of the best in the country, Tom Archdeacon, and he wrote a story. We try to do a Black History presentation every year, my brother and I. So 3 years ago, we had a presentation on Negro Leagues baseball, and I had in my office for display, I had all of my Negro League jerseys and jackets, and it was open to the public, and they could come in. And there was a presentation about Negro Leagues baseball. And then last year we did a presentation on 1966. And then we take a trip. We take a history trip every summer, my brother, myself, and he's a historian. And then one of my best friends, Tony Roseborough, who's the nephew of John Roseborough. And so last summer we wanted to go to the Negro League Baseball Museum and Jazz Museum. So we went to Kansas City. And when I saw some of this wonderful artwork, I said to them, I said, "I've got to get this back to Sinclair. It's just magnificent, and it has wide appeal. Not only, you know, with people who love history, who love African American history, who love art, just a wide audience." So I was able to talk to people here. It worked out. We've got a visiting scholars fund funded by John and Connie Taylor family, a prominent family in Dayton, and they have really kind of pushed us into stepping up our game, as it were, to, as far as having something that is just really outstanding here on campus. So, you know, I thought, what better? You know, there's nothing better than to have this artwork. So we talked to folks here, the foundation, the VP of Advancement, Madeline Isley, and then also we do a conference. It's a conference revolving on race relations and things of that nature, called the REACH Conference, and it occurs every February. And they needed an exhibit as part of their conference, and we were working on bringing the Shades of Greatness, so the timing was perfect, and it just happened. It's just wonderful how it occurred and happened, and it's been received very well. I think that next week when Dr. Doswell's here, we've got a reception planned, a luncheon, and then he'll be the keynote the following day. But there's a lot of excitement, and We've had great visitation of the gallery even prior to this conference coming, and it'll be here through March 12th. So it has been well received, and people who have seen it have just the comments on the visitor sheet are incredible. So it's been just wonderful, and we couldn't be more pleased.
Well, Michael, can you describe some of the pieces of art that are on display at the gallery?
Well, I'll describe a few of people's favorites. One is something called Sunday Best, and it is it's a painting where it has oftentimes folks would come to see the games after church. So it's got it's a painting of folks in the stands, and they've got they're dressed to the nines, so to speak, and it's just a really colorful and it's almost it's characterized, so to speak. So that's outstanding. There's one of my favorites is there's a painting of Effa Manley coming down the stairs of her home, and she's got this beautiful red dress on with kind of the legs showing, and she's trying to convince an 18-year-old ball player to sign with the Newark Eagles. That's outstanding, there's Kadir Nelson, who's one of my favorites. He's got an outstanding children's book called We Are the Ship, and three of the pieces that are in, that are in part of that book are here at the exhibit. So those are wonderful. Dr. Doswell mentioned there's a wonderful piece of Satchel Paige, and surrounding it, the artist has named several of Satchel's pitches, many of the pitches he had names for. So it has names of those pitches that surround the painting. So there's a beautiful piece that has four photographs, I believe, of Buck O'Neill when he was, not very long before he passed. But that's there as well. It's just... wow. I mean, when I was able to see it the first day, in fact, I got here, the exhibit, the curator was putting everything up over the weekend. I got here about 7 o'clock Monday morning when it opened, and he said, I knew you'd be here, so he opened it up for me. And it was just breathtaking to see, something of that nature. It excites me anyway, but I was pleased that other folks, as they went through some of the comments they made. So there are 36 pieces. Is that right, Dr. Dowser? 36 pieces, and then the jerseys. So it's nice. We've got it in what's called our triangle gallery, and then we've got some of the pieces located across the hall as well in another area. So it's absolutely wonderful.
And you said that's running through March 12th, is that correct?
March 12th, and the gallery hours are Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and then Saturday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
And Raymond, do you think that this exhibit helps people to understand the significance of the Negro Leagues and the great legacy of Negro League baseball?
We hope so. I think one of the things that the two things that we hope to have accomplished with this art exhibition, one, we were getting lots of artists interested in the topic, which was fantastic. But for the most part, we were getting artists who were depicting the works as photorealistic representations of historical photos we already had. So there were giant baseball cards and pictures we already had. And, obviously they had a lot of talent, but it wasn't telling the stories that we wanted. So we were very fortunate here in Kansas City to be able to tap into a rich artist community locally, as well as tap into a number of national artists like Kadir Nelson, who was mentioned, to look at the history, but look at themes in the history as well. So you're going to see some portrait work in the art as well, but you also see some great stories in the art too. And you mentioned the Sunday Best piece There's not a baseball in the painting, but it's completely mm-hmm. about baseball, and that's exactly the kind of thing we wanted. So we wanted to elevate the discussion and the presentation of the topic, and allow folks another way to get at this history. And for the art lovers, as was noted, as well as for the baseball fans, there's something for everyone to come and look at this. And again, we have some wonderfully talented artists. Our artist community here in Kansas City is buoyed by Hallmark greeting cards, which is based here, and a number of Hallmark artists who are part of the show. There's a wonderful art collaborative here called The Light in the Other Room, which is a group of African-American artists, and many of them are part of the show. And then, as I noted, some of the national artists, including Robert Hurst, Kadir Nelson, Courtney Wall, Steve Musgrave out of Chicago, who did the large Satchel Paige piece. And they understood what we were trying to do, and I think they did a fantastic job. And again, if it introduces the topic to people, that's what we want. And for those who do know the history, they have a great appreciation for other stories within the history.
And there are links to the art gallery and museum and information on Reach Across Dayton on our website, WVXU.org. And thanks to both of you for joining me this afternoon.
Well, thank you for
having
me.
Thank you.
Michael Carter is with Sinclair Community College, and Dr. Raymond Doswell is with the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City.